The number of protesters at Mauna Kea swelled this weekend from a couple hundred to what some report to as close to 2,000. We've also seen smaller protests here on Oahu, including Waikiki this weekend. And there were also reports of freeway tie-ups due to rogue caravans, which state officials say is unsafe. HPR's Ryan Finnerty returned from the Big Island Friday. Ryan, lots of politicians weighing in on what to do as the protests percolate, not just here in the islands, but on the mainland.
Yeah, Catherine, it's kind of feast or famine. Last week was famine. We really weren't having much in the way of public officials weighing in. And then this week, as you mentioned, there have been a lot. On Friday, we heard from Governor David Ige directly. He held a press conference at Hilo Airport that members of the media were able to attend. And he just sort of took some questions on how the events have transpired and his handling of the situation on Mauna Kea. His main point that he made clear was he doesn't want to use police to sweep the demonstrators out. He doesn't want to have to use force to get them out of their position on the Mauna Kea access road. But he did maintain his previously stated position that they are breaking the law. And the governor also reiterated his commitment to building the TMT and to begin sending construction equipment up the mountain. Here's what he had to say.
We are looking at and planning for what is the best way to have a safe operation that can move equipment up the mountain. So we had made plans to increase police participation as the effort proceeded. You know, we'll continue to assess the situation. As I said, I am deciding not to escalate and add more National Guard troops because I don't want to exacerbate the situation. We will continue to reach out and engage as they are interested. Some have expressed interest, others have declined. You know, we are looking for ways to find common ground and find a way forward. Well, we did have the establishment of a Pu'u Honua, which is a traditional refuge where we agreed to be respectful of those inside the Pu'u Honua in exchange for them behaving and obeying orders and laws, and they are not. So the Pu'u Honua has fell apart. Now, you know, we continue to look for ways to resolve the conflict and allow construction to move forward.
And so, Catherine, that was Governor David Ige kind of giving his thoughts on the situation on Mauna Kea on Friday, so before this past weekend. And on the other side are the protesters, or the protectors, as they call themselves, who say they will not leave until construction has been stopped. They have strongly pushed back against a lot of the things the governor said in that press conference, including that claim we just heard that the Pu'u Honua has fallen apart. And just for a little bit of context for everyone, the Pu'u Honua is the camp area that is across the street from the Mauna Kea Access Road on the south side of Saddle Road, if you were looking at it on a map. And then the checkpoint, which is sort of the focal point of the protest that's actually on the Mauna Kea Access Road, is across the street from that. So they're kind of together but separate. And that Pu'u Honua, there was an agreement between the state and the demonstrators that that would not be swept. There wouldn't be any police there as long as certain rules were abided by. The governor says those rules have not been met. The agreement hasn't been upheld. The demonstrators push back against that and say that's not true. But their message from day one has been that we're not going until we stop the construction. And that was reiterated by almost everyone I talked to while I was there. They were committed to staying as long as it took to meet that goal. On the first day or two, it wasn't really clear to me that that was going to be possible with the number of people that were up there, the remoteness of the area. You know, it takes a lot of support to sustain that many people in an area that has pretty much no existing infrastructure. There's no water, no electricity, no source of supplies in the immediate area. Everything has to be brought up. And it seemed like to most of us watching that the state would just kind of wait it out for a little while in those opening days, that they'd be, you know, for lack of a better word, to starve them out, and that the movement would kind of lose steam and run out of gas and everyone would have to go home. But by the time I left last week, it had become pretty clear to me that the demonstrators were not only aware of the logistics required to sustain their protest, they were also rapidly taking steps to manifest that logistics operation. There's right now a kitchen that's capable of feeding at least 100 people at a time. There's a team of medics that are fully equipped with basic supplies going around the camp, checking on people, making sure everyone's drinking and getting enough sunscreen, drinking water, that is. There are half dozen portable toilets that are emptied every morning. And there was even an area in one tent where Lomi Lomi practitioners were giving massages to people who needed a little bit of rest. So I kind of wanted to learn how that was all happening, since that is such a huge undertaking. And I spoke with Marie Alohalani Brown. She is her day job is as a professor at the University of Hawaii's Department of Religion, but she is right now helping to manage the kitchen at the Pu'uhonua, which is supporting the demonstration. And she was also one of the kupuna who was arrested on Mauna Kea last week.
So what we're doing, and this is just one example, every day or every 2 days, we train people, they take over the whole day, and then they train the next group. So first of all, we're feeding, in the beginning it was maybe 20, 30 people. Now we're up to 100, at least 100 people pass through here and we're feeding them. We now have a recycling station. So every time somebody passes by, we teach them how to recycle.
So how is it all happening? Where is all this food coming from for all these people? All the medical supplies? How are the porta potties getting cleaned? How are you guys making it all happen?
Okay. The medic tent, they have their own website, Mauna Medics, and people send in send supplies, make donations there. I'm one of the people who puts out a kahea for anything that we need on the different Mauna Kea groups or on my personal webpage, and they're public. Hawaii Johns is doing an amazing job. They're bringing more porta potties today, and Drysin comes every morning to empty them because we have so many people that they fill up in less than 24 hours. And it's very important to us because this is a pu'uhonua. This place must be kept clean. Now we even have little Keiki, 8 years old, like that. And what they do is for 10 minutes, they have a little trash bag. For 10 minutes, they go around and pick up anything that somebody didn't notice that they dropped. So everybody helps. We have donations coming in for clothes. Some people come here, they're from Kona. They're from hotter parts of the island. They don't have clothes, but they're coming here anyways. So now we have all these blankets, socks, different kinds of clothing to help them. This is only possible because countless people are making donations, Hawaiians, non-Hawaiians, anyone who's helping us.
I saw at the front of the Pu'uhonua, there's a board for helping coordinate rides. Could you tell me a little about
Kanaka
that?
Kanaka Uber. I love it. Please. Kanaka Uber. I don't know who wrote that, but it's brilliant. Kanaka Uber. Yeah, so anybody needs a ride? I mean, there's different things that we're doing. There's the Kanaka Uber, who I don't know who it is, but I want to meet him or her. And then there's a list on the whiteboard of people who need rides, and then people who are willing to give rides. Now we've also got donations, so we have gas cards. So I'm telling people, whoever feels like doing those kind of things or even making trash runs, they get a gas card.
And Catherine, Alohalani told me that most of the food and the supplies and services like the porta potty cleaning have been donated by local businesses or just members of the community, as she mentioned. And I even observed a number of local restaurants up there preparing hot food. One of them was even frying chicken on site. And it kind of reminded me of this famous quote in military history that amateurs study tactics, professionals study logistics, and it appears to me that the demonstrators up there have kind of taken that proverb to heart, and it really does seem like they're prepared to make good on their promise to stay up there for quite some time.
Yeah, but it's just really interesting to see the politics that's happening to you, Lieutenant Governor up there this morning.
I don't know how that
sits with the governor. Yeah, Mayor Harry Kim. So yeah, I'll be curious to see how this plays out over the next week.
Yeah, the governor really is a man on an island, both literally and figuratively, in this situation.
All right, very interesting. Thanks so much, Ryan.
Sure thing.
That was Ryan Finnerty talking about the standoff at Mauna Kea as we go into the second week of demonstrations from those who oppose the building of the 30-meter telescope. And while Native Hawaiians are holding demonstrations across the state in support of protesters, there are others, Native Hawaiians, who back the telescope and say they're a silent majority in this controversy. HBR's Ku'uwe Hiraishi reports.
Demonstrators on the side of the road wave Hawaiian flags, carrying signs in support of protesters calling themselves Kia'i or protectors of Mauna Kea. Tiana Henderson joined a recent rally at the Hawaii State Capitol.
We're here to be able to stand with our brothers and sisters who are in Mauna Kea, as well as all of our Kanaka Maoli throughout the world. So, you know, this is what we have to do.
On Hawaii Island, there's support for the other side of the telescope divide. Dozens rallied in Hilo backing the construction of the telescope. The numbers aren't large, but Jackie Hoover, a Big Island resident and TMT supporter, says there's a reason why telescope backers aren't as visible.
I have family, loved ones, ohana, who are on all fronts, the protectors, the supporters, law enforcement. So it's difficult for us as Hawaiians, as neighbors, ohana, and friends to really be confrontational with each other.
Hoover believes the telescope will provide jobs for local kids and diversify an island economy that's overly dependent on tourism. Hokulea master navigator Kalepa Babayan is also among those who have been vocal in their support of TMT. He says he backs the study of astronomy because it's a natural extension of traditional navigation. According to a 2018 Honolulu Star Advertiser poll, almost three-fourths of those Native Hawaiians and local residents surveyed backed the project. Mauna Kea astronomer Thane Curry, who is not Hawaiian, says this should make TMT support abundantly clear. But he says local residents have a lot more at stake than he does.
I believe what we're wanting to do here with TMT is something that's inspiring. But in principle, you know, I could just sort of withdraw from the controversy. And I think we have to understand that people who've been here for generations, they really can't withdraw from this issue.
That's true for Waimea native Kohoku Alohio Keao Lindsay Asing. He showed his support for the protest dancing hula at the state capitol rally. He says our kupuna say the land is sacred, and if we care for it, it will care for us. He says that's why we're all here at the capitol, to show aloha, loyalty, and empower one another. He says that's why Native Hawaiians need to keep fighting. Those that support TMT feel a similar commitment, but instead to support the telescope for the scientific knowledge it promises. For Hawaii Public Radio, I'm Kuvehi Hiraishi.